Spencer.
And welcome back to the second hour of We the People. And, of course, we were here the first hour, so we don't have that breathless...
yeah, we've relaxed.
That hysterical breathless
sound. We've settled in.
That you so love about this program. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer up on Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, and they do everything tractors. So if you need a new tractor, need your old tractor worked on, need parts, go in and see them. They'll do a great job for you. And their phone number is 226-9226, or you can catch them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
And we do have a whole lot of other people who sponsor the show and kind of just do that as individuals, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate that a whole bunch.
Extraordinarily helpful, so we thank you for that. Any pitching in is always fantastic. So don't want to leave them out, though. But if you want more information about that, if you'd like, actually, to give suggestions, provided they're productive, we like productive suggestions. And actually, you know, people are really nice. I mean, our phone numbers, our cell numbers are right there on the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us. Got email and phone number right there. And, you know, except for all the telemarketers, if you're turning us all over to telemarketers, maybe that's how they're doing it. But I don't ever get people who just call and hang up or... you know, do things that are weird. So it says a lot about the public, actually. We would love to hear from you if you have ideas for programs, if you've got people you've heard on the radio, seen them on TV, saw a little two-minute interview, you're like, wanted to learn the rest. So send those folks to us, and we'll get them on the air. Because people do like to talk about what their expertise is and what they're passionate about. So it just so happens our neighbor, our long-lost neighbor, David, who moved across town, has written a book, and he went to the White House.
Yeah, he did.
And he did also.
We didn't talk about that.
I did?
Yeah.
I like that. We need to talk about that.
Yeah.
Good one, Bill.
Yeah.
Way to pitch it.
Yeah.
In case you just tuned in, Bill tried last hour to actually get us to talk about that, and we kept derailing him. Good job, David. So David J. Harris, Jr., you can find him at davidharrisjr.com. No J in that one.
Either one will actually take you there, tag for all social media handles is David J. Harris, Jr.
Nice. And so the book is Why I Couldn't Stay Silent, One Man's Battle as a Black Conservative. And that sort of says more than just the, like, small amount of words.
There's a lot in that, right?
You're like, oh, you're doing that.
Yes, I am.
That must be really hard.
You must have some friends.
You must be incredibly popular on the one hand and then incredibly unpopular on the other hand.
I don't read the hate mail.
The hate mail sometimes is kind of interesting because you look at it and you go, really? How did you arrive at that?
Yeah, true. I try not to read the hate mail, I got to say.
You realize that common sense isn't common and that logic isn't actually part of everyone's makeup.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have discovered that.
Yeah, it's just tough. So let's see the little blurb from the back of your book. I had read a little part of it last hour, but to continue on with that, all of the negativity and deceit of the 2016 election seemed to be casting a shadow over what I believed were the most important issues about our country's future. Why I Couldn't Stay Silent tells the story about a young black man's pursuit to shine light and make sense out of the darkness that was overshadowing our country. This book may challenge everything you currently believe about racism in our country, which is awesome because that is a platform you can use and cause you to reflect on the solutions that I present as possible answers to how we could achieve greatness together as united people. And just by way of pitch, I actually have the book in my hand so I can tell you, for all you non-readers or like, oh, it's a book, yay, you know, it's not even an entertaining book maybe you're thinking, but no. It's only 130 pages long. It's really very smallish. What is it, 5x8?
Yeah, I believe so.
It's like 5x8, so it's not huge. It's not super thick. It's not in tiny, tiny print. The chapters are short and catchy. Okay, what's your favorite one? Just out of curiosity. Since we know to the White House isn't one of them.
I have several that I really love, but I actually really love the chapter that my wife did. It's just a few pages. Actually, Bill just read it and said he really liked that. She had a moment during the 2016 election race that she couldn't stay silent, and I won't spoil it, but, she, almost wasn't here on this earth. She almost didn't arrive because of the choice her mother was about to make.
Oh.
And so she came out, and she'd never publicly shared it. She shared it on my page. It was shared, I don't know, hundreds or thousands of times. But there was a miracle that came about from her sharing her testimony and her story that's in this chapter. And that's just like, I mean, it's absolutely just amazing. So I love and adore my bride. But I think that's probably, I think, the shortest chapter, too. It's just a few pages with the miracle as well. But it's amazing. Amazing part of the book.
Well, I just read it during a break, and it's yeah, you got to read it.
There are a lot of stories like that, and unfortunately, I don't think they're told enough. So
true.
Thank her for that.
I will.
And that's another good reason to write a book. You get to put things out there that people don't normally see.
I think one of my other favorite chapters is on, it's called The Scandal-Free Barack.
I saw that.
He continues to, you know, champion himself as a scandal-free president. And so I outline with plenty of sources to back up everything, 18 of his largest scandals that the mainstream media just swept underneath the rug and most people have no clue about.
Any one of which they'd be impeaching Trump for.
Absolutely.
Actually, a fun thing with that chapter would be to make your own list and then compare them.
Yeah, right?
Because I was just like, ooh, do I want to wreck it? Maybe I should make my own list and see how many of them I was into. And then before we skip her, your forward is by Candace Owens. So
absolutely.
Let's give her a plug.
Huge shout out to Candace Owens, Director of Communications for Turning Point USA. She is just the right individual at this time to be a young, beautiful, black conservative that knows her stuff. She's very knowledgeable. She reads and researches a lot, and she is an absolute just wrecking ball. Actually, I was talking to her yesterday, and she said that somebody asked Maxine Waters about Candace Owens, and she did not want to say anything negative. It was like she didn't want to get into that fight. She just said, oh, you know what? Well, the young lady can choose to believe what she wants to believe. That's just fine.
That's probably a smart move.
Yeah, absolutely. She didn't want Candace on her.
No, she would have got chewed up.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. So amazing young woman, wrote the foreword for my book, and just launched Blexit, blexit.com. I'm a part of that, and believe we'll be on the board.
And what does
well.
That mean
talking about that.
For everybody who doesn't do acronym?
Blacks exiting the monolithic thought that has kept us in bondage to a plantation thinking. I mean, that's my own words, but that's what the goal is just to wake Black America up and say, what issues do you value? And what policies should we be supporting in order to see the change that needs to take place in Black communities around the country? So it's for everybody, and anybody can support us, but it's specifically targeting the unfortunately completely lopsided sway of the Black community towards the Democrat Party.
But the Black community is not wholly in endorsing that stance, are they?
You know what? The approval rating for Donald Trump among blacks was 7% when he came in. And I think the last Rasmussen poll I saw is 39%. So there's been an absolute sway, pendulum sway. It's swinging, and I think it's going to continue to swing. When you've got historic low black unemployment, historic low ever recorded black, Mexican, Asian, and women, 60-year low for women, and a 400% increase in black-owned businesses in the last year, the mainstream media can't continue to just to use the same, you know, violent, divisive rhetoric. They just can't do it.
Yeah, Donald Trump's out of control. Something's got to be done.
Yeah, impeach him. Why? Because he's bringing too many jobs back here.
Well, he was right when he said, you know, the winning thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're going to be sick of winning.
I'm not sick of winning yet.
Hey, that could be your next book. I'm not sick of winning.
Hey, it might be.
You better get there before Donald Trump gets here.
Are you sick of winning yet?
That'll be his book after he's president. They never got sick of the winning.
That's right.
They got sick of me, but they didn't get sick of winning.
That's good.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we have to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest. And we have now cheated Bill out of one more second.
We'll get there next.
They don't call me a foil for nothing.
Right now, they're out there betting. Will Bill learn about the DC trip? We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Came undone when it got around to gotten guns. I don't know how he grew up, but it sure wasn't down at the hunting club. Cause if it was, he'd understand just a little bit more about the working man. God and guns. Keep us strong. That's what this country was founded on. Well, we might as well give up and run if we let them take our God and guns. Out here in my neck of the woods, where God's great and guns are good, you really can't know that much about them if you think we're better off without them.
Thank you to all of our active duty military, our veterans, our people that are thinking about signing up, that are maybe high school students that have registered early and are waiting to graduate. I know my brother did that. So thank you to all of those people, because you guys are the reason we get to have shows like this.
That's right.
You're the reason that the other guys get to try to make us silent. All right. It's all your fault that we have all this fighting.
Freedom isn't free.
Otherwise, everybody would be told what to say. Like Bill.
Yeah. You know, we were talking during the break, and I didn't realize it, but David went to D.C.
What?
More than once.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Has he been recently?
I think so, because I saw a picture of Donald Trump holding his book.
Stop.
And when I talked to the president about that, he said there was quite a story behind it, and he really wanted David to tell it. So...
when the president called you this morning?
Well, it was yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely amazing. I was there for Turning Point USA's Young Black Leadership Summit. I was one of the speakers, and part of the event, they partnered with the White House. Donald Trump wanted all of us to go to the White House. So we had about 400 black conservatives that all went into the White House. I was hoping that I would be able to get close enough to give him my book. I had written it for him and had a little... 5-second elevator pitch. Sorry. I wanted to tell them in case it happened. I was able to get the book through. I'm not sure if they would have let it through or not, but I was selected with Brandon Tatum. He's director of urban engagement for Turning Point USA, and Rob Smith, that also does some amazing things and is on Fox News and different stations all the time, to actually speak to the press. So they escorted us around all of the normal and right through all the normal
All the things that filter out all the idiots from CNN?
Well, no, just all the, you know, as they, 400 of us are going to the White House, so we had all these checkpoints and checkpoints and checkpoints.
Oh, I bet.
So we had an agent, a Secret Service guy with us, just kind of walk us, and he may have actually just been a White House guy, but he was just walking us right through everything, like these three are with me, and just walk through.
Nice.
So that was really cool, but then by the time I got in talking to the press and I went in, the room where Donald Trump was going to be meeting us and speaking was already full of everybody.
Mm.
So there were, you know, 30 people deep, arm to arm, from the rope all the way back to where I walked in at. So I was like, crap, how am I going to get to the front?
Yeah. Now you're in the room with your book, except you're clear in the back of the room.
Yeah, yeah. And my wife and daughters are there. And so I was like, well, I was like, okay, I guess it's not going to happen. And something just triggered me and said, no, you need to go try. You need to try to make it happen. So I tried to go around the cameramen not going to happen around behind them, too much equipment and stairs and or, you know, ladders and stuff. So I just kind of got as close as I could, and then I was just kind of like, okay, God, if it's going to happen, I guess you're going to have to make it happen. And coming right along behind me was a press guy with a cameraman behind him, and he was like, excuse me, folks, excuse me, got to get this camera guy to the front, excuse me. And so people were making a way for him to go. So I looked at the camera guy, and there was two
you're
other
like,
camera
I've
guys behind
NASCAR.
Him.
I've seen NASCAR. I know how to do that.
Yeah.
We're going to trap.
So I got right behind the camera guy, and, you know, I am a big guy. I'm like, excuse me, folks. Excuse me, trying to get to the front, you got to get to the front. So I got all the way to the front, and then wound up just talking to the people that were next to me, and they, most of them recognized me from from speaking or whatever anyway. So I wound up in the very, very front. So I FaceTimed, I Facebook Live the whole thing with him coming out, his whole speech. There was a moment where I was live, and we were chanting USA, USA, and I held my book up in the camera view, and he saw that, and he pointed at me, and I pointed back, and there was another moment in it's about 40 minutes he was talking to us, where he said something about loving America, and I said, and we love you, and he stopped, and he said, and I love you too. So that was cool to have that exchange, and then he came around. And started coming to shake hands and sign hats and saw my book and went, whoa! He's all, look at that right there. I said, Mr. President, you are the reason why I could not stay silent. And he was like, wow, take a picture. So I'm living, I'm Facebook living. I don't want to turn that off to take a picture.
Sure.
So I just held the camera up as if I'm taking a picture and got it steady and waited for him to, you know, he posed. And then I said, okay, it's great. He said, all right, thank you. Is this mine? Can I have this? I said, yes, absolutely. He said, all right, thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, how fun is that?
So amazing. It was absolutely just, I was like done at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Mission accomplished.
Like,
mission
okay,
accomplished. Yeah. Yeah. So
that was the picture that I saw, and I thought, what is going on with David?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy's killing it.
Yeah. To have the President of the United States take a picture with your book. I'm just waiting for him to tweet about it. I'm going to make a little video with those sections that I just spoke of and kind of add some to it and hope that it goes crazy viral on Twitter because everybody knows he's on Twitter and hope he sees it. You know, and I'll tag
him. Make sure
him
you
and
do
say,
it really, 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 really late at night.
Yeah, because it's true, right? I'll do it all.
Because he's really, really late. He's my kind of guy, Mr. Late
at
Night.
I'll post it 2, 3, 4 in the morning. So it'd be amazing if he reads it, but it's definitely, it's definitely something that the left's not going to love.
It blows the narrative.
It does.
I mean, it blows the whole narrative, you know, that he's a racist and a hater and, you know, there's no history there.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many people that have worked in his staff over the years who have been black, who said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, they were awesome to work with in the Trump organization.
Yeah. Katrina Pearson is his, one of his chief advisors. And she's black. I mean, she's mixed like me, but the funny thing is being mixed, nobody ever accused me of being a white guy.
That's funny. You're like half white, half black, but it was always a black part that won.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody ever accused me of being white. I'm not white. You know, the person doesn't look at me and they see that. I identify as an American, and I identify and accept and appreciate both of my cultures that I've come from. But when a person sees me, they don't see a white person. So I can use that to my advantage in saying, yeah, I understand what it means to be a part of the black community. But I can also share with you what it means to be a conservative and why I support my president.
Right.
And I've got a chapter in there for the black folks that, you know, might draw them in. It's called When Barack Was Elected, I Cried.
I saw that.
The interesting thing is I didn't realize I was going to shed a tear because a black man became president. I wasn't even thinking about race. I still remember where I was at. We were living in Laguna Beach, and I was watching the election results come over the TV, and then it hit me. A black man is going to be elected president. But that was overshadowed with the sadness that it was Barack Obama, because I did not believe that he would adequately represent black America as the president of the United States.
So you, at that point, you already knew who he was.
I didn't vote for him. Yeah, I believe. Yeah. My mom said, again, research, he was pro-abortion. He voted for partial birth abortion 2 or 3 times. That's nothing that I want to have anything to do with. It's a eugenics program against the black community. You know, Margaret Sanger said blacks and Jews are like weeds and need to be exterminated. And she founded Planned Parenthood. And 80%+ of Planned Parenthoods are within 2 miles walking distances from black urban communities.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
And it's kind of crazy that that's almost a well-kept secret.
They try to keep it a secret.
Which is just silly. I mean, yeah.
Well,
numbers, I don't have any of that in front of me, but the numbers of black children that never make it are staggering.
Well, I know in New York, there's more black babies aborted in a year than are born.
In New York?
In New York.
Wow. Well, in the movie Death of a Nation, I think Dinesh D'Souza covered that pretty well, how all that came to be and the connection between the black community and Margaret Sanger.
Yeah, he did. He did it very well. Powerful movie.
Stunned us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any idea if the Gosnell movie is out on any kind of video at this point? Because it was only here for like 2 days. I think we were out of town at that time.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, David, what else did you learn when you were at the White House?
That Donald Trump loves all people. That the White House was, it just even being in there, it was so nostalgic to be in there. And I've got a lot more pictures I haven't posted, but just to be in the White House and to walk the halls that have been walked by the presidents of the United States, and some good, some bad, some indifferent, whatever, what have you.
Still very, very humbling.
It's very humbling, yeah, very humbling. And just amazing to be there. And I got to be there with my wife and my daughters. Our daughters were there. So it was an absolutely amazing experience. I'll need to write a book just on that, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, you could.
He's, everyone that I know that has actually met him or been in a room where he was speaking, you know, in a small enough setting, you know, not a big stadium type of thing.
Right.
But he just, they said you just see him rewriting the agenda. Because people in those kinds of positions usually, you know, they're pretty well lined out. You get this many minutes. You got to say this. Because their schedule is really tight. And he's like, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. All right, here. Well, you know, I want you to do this. And runs over there and assigns that to staff. I mean, did that happen in your thing? Or was
I didn't
it a
specifically
little more?
See that. But I know that I think he spoke over the time we thought he was going to speak. Then he hung out, took pictures and signed hats or books or whatever, had people, whatever people had for him to sign, and was just very personable. And I love that about him. He's not politically correct.
He was just like super energetic and really, really friendly.
Yeah, very friendly.
Regular.
He's a regular guy, and he's made. I mean, that's his MO. He's been that way. He hasn't ever had that billionaire.
Well,
you know,
I can't remember any president that would go to, you know, they call them rallies or whatever, but goes out and does a speech and draws that many people. Consistently, it's not like a fluke. In a certain area, he drew more people.
Yeah, went to the popular place.
He packs the place, no matter where he is. And I don't think there's a politician today that can do that.
Absolutely not.
There's a reason for that.
It's kind of funny though. The thing that makes him awesome at that is the part that people is also why people don't like him, because he shoots from the hip. He says what he thinks. He's not polished when he does that in a lot of cases, and people are like, well, it's not very presidential.
No,
but if it was, he'd be the same guy.
I'd rather get results.
Yep.
I'd rather have the results.
Exactly.
Yep. You know, I think his heart's in the right place. I can see past the small tweets that he makes that maybe...
Oh, there's
maybe
plenty of things he says I don't like.
Sharp, callous, or not completely thought through.
Yeah,
but his heart's in the right
place. Bad. Although it was super funny.
It was funny, yeah. But I like the results that we're getting and seeing from this administration, and that's what I want more of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the kicker. And you know what? Hopefully, with this new movement that you're part of with the... What is it called?
Blexit.
I was wondering.
Blexit.com, yeah.
And it stands for?
Blacks exiting. So just exit the monolithic thought that we all have to think the same way, vote the same way, based on what our friends, parents, or grandparents have told us to do. Be free thinkers. Think for yourself. We're free.
And Charlie Kirk's kind of doing that in the younger set. Just because you're younger doesn't mean you have to, you know, vote and act a certain way.
Yeah, Charlie Kirk's the man.
Which is kind of awesome, actually. We'd love to talk to him, too. All right, got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more? What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise, and stormed hell's rusty gates? What if his people prayed? If we pray for those raised up to lead the way, then maybe kids in school could pray and unborn children see light of day. What if the life that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his people prayed?
That's awesome. Stop asking Oprah what to do, please, Lord.
What if they stopped asking Oprah what
to
do?
Come on.
I listened to that song over and over and over last night, and I'm like, I got to pick a piece of it. And it's like, I can't pick 30 seconds. It's got to be longer.
That was good.
Anyway, that was a good message. From you. I didn't really realize you were a big Right to Life guy. But
absolutely.
Apparently God did, and he helped me pick the music. So
yeah.
Anyway, that was very handy.
It's funny, all the people that have a problem with pro-life are the ones already born.
Yeah, that is kind of awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a real war on women. There's a real war on women's babies.
Yeah, and they call it healthcare. That, I think, more than anything, that makes me angry.
Yeah.
That is not health care.
No.
Death care? Death care, maybe. We could say that. But it is not health care.
You know, when they enacted Roe v. Wade, they didn't have the technology that they do now to prove that a baby has a heartbeat at 8 weeks and can feel pain at 12 weeks. So the whole theory that it's just tissue taken out, they can't stand on that. To know a baby can feel pain at 12 weeks, and then you want to go in that inside the womb and mutilate the baby and kill it and pull it out, it's just barbaric. It's absolutely sickening.
Especially when they're like 8 months, 9 months, you know.
Yeah. 5, 6, 4, 3.
Spooky.
You feel pain.
So in your Blexit movement, how big a part is that?
So we just launched it 2 weeks ago in D.C.
Okay.
And Candace and Brandon and I are on the board initially. And I think she's going to add some more board members to it. So we're strategizing right now what 2019 will look like. It'll consist of rallies in, I know, California, Texas, Florida, and I believe Chicago. And I cannot confirm or deny that Donald Trump may be at one of those events as well. He does know about it. He supports it. And so it's amazing to have that kind of support from him, because you know a lot of the support will come to help us achieve what our goals are in trying to wake Black America up, to really just pay attention to what's taking place and the policies that are keeping Black Americans in chains, really. It's just a new kind of plantation, I believe.
If you could fix one thing, you know, like one policy type of thing, if it was yours to do with your pen and your phone, and you could just make one policy change, what would it be?
You mean specifically it has to do with the Black community?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a hard question, but
It's a difficult one, because it's kind of like Bill and I were talking about that earlier. You know, once you, it's like don't feed the bears, because then they won't learn to fend for themselves and feed themselves. Yeah. Once you do that, once you've been doing that for so long, to just not feed the bears is that just immediately condemning them to, you know, to death? Or are they going to fend for themselves and figure it out? But the fact that that families can only get aid, women can only get aid if there's no father in the home, that needs to be rescinded. I mean, I think that should be the number one thing that's rescinded. Is like, hey, if there's a father in the home and he's trying to make a better life and he's got a job, and let's still give that family aid for a certain amount of time until they can fend for themselves, until they can actually support themselves. And I think people feel better about it. I know I've felt better about having a job. I know when I was fresh out of high school and then newly married with and my wife got pregnant, we couldn't afford the health care. We didn't have health care, and we didn't have insurance. So we had to use Medicare, I think it was at that time, for
Medi-Cal.
Probably. Medi-Cal, yeah, excuse me. Medicare's for
older. Yeah, I know, older. I know. It's a meta something.
Yeah, it's a meta. We got off of that as soon as we could afford everything ourselves had to do with the baby. So there was a need for it for us in our circumstances at that age. But I think to penalize families, especially black families and mothers and the children are really who's penalized, by saying you're only going to get aid if there's no father in the home is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to reverse that and start to gear, policies towards enabling black men to be fathers. And the black women to want a father in the home, and if they can't do that without getting their aid cut off, then it's a catch-22.
And it's been that way forever.
Decades, yeah.
I mean, I'm 57, and when I was in elementary school, I was a sixth grader in Connecticut, and going to Catholic school, and they bust in kids from the inner city. And I was at a science fair project with a girl named Sabra Mayo, who was from the inner city. She had like five or six sisters, and they all had kids.
Wow.
Shows you how stupid we were. Okay, I'm a sixth grader, and my science fair partner, Sabra Mayo, has two children in sixth grade. And I was the oldest of five kids. It wasn't like we didn't have any kids in our house, but we didn't really know where they came from exactly. You know, I mean,
wow.
We just didn't talk about all that back then.
You led a very sheltered life.
We did. We missed
very sheltered.
We missed, you know, like Woodstock, and it was 50 miles away. You know, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Didn't know what it was. Yeah, we never heard about it until she was in college.
Wow. Oh, that was right next to us.
There were a lot of things I missed. But one of them was, you know, my science fair project partner had two kids, and it was kind of like,
six, in the sixth grade.
But you didn't think about her having them, because we didn't really know what was involved with all that. But I look back on that.
Wow.
They lived in a tenement house in inner city Hartford. And they had always garbage in the, like, they had the really short, like, hurricane fence that you see of the inner city houses, you know, the little short fence around it.
Yeah.
And there was always all this garbage blowing around. And I remember every time we took her home after we worked on our project, because we lived about a mile from school, and my mom was like, oh, she can come over to our house, and then, you know, we'll just drive her home. We go down there, and we drive away. I'm like, Mom, why don't they pick up the garbage, you know? Because my dad was like, taskmaster, get out there and rake. There's leaves out there. You know, if there were papers blowing in the yard, my father would have had a stroke. And we just didn't understand the lifestyle, and there were no men there. No dads, no brothers, no, just all these women with, you know,
babies.
These babies,
having babies
who live there. And so apparently, this is just, I don't know, when we started doing this, but it's been a long time, creating this culture.
Yeah.
What a trap.
It is absolutely
so
a trap.
So in your group, you must have people from all over the country, people from bigger cities and stuff.
Yeah, we did. I mean, again, we just launched 2 weeks ago. I know Candace and I and Brandon are really wanting to include as many of the trailblazers that have been carrying the torch for black conservatives for decades. There's a lot out there, and we want to bring them all together. We really feel like it's the time to unite, to bring as many black individuals that have conservative values together from technology, from manufacturing, from business development and management, and really begin to teach as many young black leaders, men, women, that want to learn about the trades that will inspire them or that they want to get into, give them the tools necessary to do that and learn in the process about the kinds of policies that actually enable it to be simpler and actually work for our benefit, not against our benefit.
Right.
So that's where we're at.
You wouldn't think you'd have to sell that.
You shouldn't have to.
That would be controversial.
It's just getting the word out and making sure that we all know. And there's a lot of trailblazers that have gone before us. Mason Weaver, I had on my show. He left.
Why do I know his name?
He's been a prominent black conservative for a lot of years. He's in his 60s. Mason Weaver. He was there in D.C. He left the Black Panther Party. He was in Berkeley.
That's it.
He was in Berkeley, left the Black Panther Party, and became a conservative and has been championing that since the 60s. So there's a lot of individuals like that that have been carrying the torch that we need to rally behind, that have knowledge, have history, and then the leaders in, like I said, education, technology, business development, and manufacturing, and begin to be specific and strategic towards the black community. And I think when they see us doing that from that perspective, then in the process, they're going to find out why we vote the way we do and why we support the agendas that we are of the president, of his administration, of conservative agendas that make it simpler and easier, you know, less regulations, less big government, but get the government out of your, you know, out of your daily lives.
I don't understand why that's hard to sell either. I mean, that has never made sense to me.
And that's what they have to understand, and they don't. There's no understanding of how all that works.
Yeah.
You know, get the government out of your life.
Yeah.
That
big government sucks.
Yeah, but that must be a horribly scary thing when that's all you've grown up with.
Right. You know? Yeah. Government checks. Yep. Yeah. Every month. Government food.
The government
assistant. Government cheese.
Yeah.
All
never,
of it.
Never
like
going
to
work.
The government displaced the black fathers in the home and became the father in the home.
Yep.
And have done a horrific job of doing that. And in doing that and taking black men out of the home, it's created just catastrophic results for the black community.
So sad and silly. And it's amazing that you can do that with a whole culture and that they don't revolt.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're like leading a revolt that should be obvious.
It should be. Yeah. We're going to make it more obvious.
And yet you're taking tons of crap for it. And good for you for doing it.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. One last swift break and then we'll come back. Anything, Bill, that you need to know before the top of the hour so that, you know.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I got a couple other chapters I buzzed through real quick, but...
And we do have to hear the rest of the story about the cameraman. When we come back, David told us on the last break there was a little more to the cameraman when he drafted on to get to the front of the room to get his book in the president's hand. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I wanna light up underneath the no smoking sign. Sometimes I wish they'd tell me how justice got so blind. We said just leave me alone, 'cause I'm doing all right. You can take your change on down the road and leave me here with mine. 'Cause that ain't my America, that ain't this country's roots. You wanna slam old Uncle Sam, but I ain't letting you. I'm mad as hell and you know I still bleed red, white, and blue.
Figured in light of the fact that you were, you know, breaking with tradition, you were probably the wayward son. This would be the David theme song, the wayward son song. So what haven't we covered? What else do you want people to know? Oh, the cameraman thing. Tell them that story because that's hilarious.
So it was definitely a God thing that I got to the front rope. I shared how there was no way I was going to get to the front. It's body to body, you know, 15, at least close to 20 people deep, 30 people across.
You were clear in the back.
And I was in the very back. And along comes this cameraman, a press man bringing a cameraman.
That's okay.
Sorry about that, folks. A press man bringing
situation.
A cameraman through the front. And the guy thought that the cameraman was supposed to be at the front. Anyway, so I got behind the cameraman and got all the way to the front. And then about 2 minutes later, security came over and were like, yeah, you don't have the right pass to be in the very front because Fox and CNN, all the mainstream media were here. So the cameraman had to go back to the back. So God set that up just for me to get to the front.
He put him there so you could get up front.
Just
but they
get
didn't,
to the front.
You didn't have the right pass either, though, right?
Well, no, it wasn't about that. It was just that, I mean, we were all there. to be there.
You were allowed to be there. Right.
But he wasn't allowed to be in the front with his camera because the cameras were on the sides and they were who, you know, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, whatever. They were all in the back. So they didn't want him set up in the very front. They didn't want that angle, whatever it was. So out of all the different, you know, sections that this guy could have burrowed his way through the front, he came right behind my right shoulder. So I hopped in and drafted, and then he had to go back. But I stayed.
And left you there.
Yeah, I stayed.
Yeah.
I guess we sort of had that at Disney World. We went looking for a tombstone in the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, that's right.
My one of my coworkers, her uncle was like an Imagineer. Really a big one. It drew all sorts of stuff that we all know from Disneyland and Disney World. All the ghosts that are dancing in the Haunted Mansion. That was his idea.
Wow.
So anyway, they put a tombstone up for him after he died. So we asked the staff, we're like, hey, do you know where this is? It's hot, hot, hot Florida. I mean, we're just sweating. We're dying. And the girl's like, yeah, come with me. I found it. Well, it's at the front of the line. And we're like, oh, this is so awesome. So we take pictures of it. She goes, well, are you going to ride the ride? We were like, yeah, but we're not going to go all the way back. She goes, oh, just stay right here. It was like, thanks, Uncle Campbell.
Nice.
So that's our that's the only drafting we've ever done was on a tombstone at the Haunted Mansion. Yours is way better.
So good.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so who do you guys work with anybody in particular at the White House? I mean, is this going to be an ongoing kind of partnership or...
I don't know the details of that. I know Candace.
Is that Candace's department?
Yeah, I know Candace was at the White House on election night with Donald Trump. He had election party, Don Jr., Melania. A lot of people were there, but I know she got to talk to him about this at the White House. So he's aware, he supports us. And so she's kind of, between her and Charlie, they're our inside connection right now at the White House.
And Charlie Kirk, he's a prolific guy on Twitter
and
everywhere else.
Twitter, Instagram.
He is all over the place. You can't miss him.
Yeah, he's doing a brilliant young man. He's only 25. Started Turning Point when he was 19.
Where's 18, he come 19. From anyway?
Not sure what city he was born in. I would say get his book. Turning Point is the name of his first book, and it kind of talks about the turning point for himself and why he chose to start that organization that is just supporting conservatives on campuses across the country where they're predominantly 80 to 90% more likely. Supported and only organizations that are leftist, liberal organizations. And so conservatives on campuses across the country don't have a safe haven, so to speak, to be able to feel like they're supported or get plugged into something that supports our conservative values.
Well, and if they, you know, we've all seen what happens when they want to have a speaker or something like that, you know, then they burn down half the campus, break all the windows.
Yeah, yeah,
such free a tolerant speech. Group.
Yeah, such a tolerant group.
Well, I have a feeling that if Trump's schedule allows it, he'll show up. He'll show up.
I hope so. I believe he will. At least one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
So how are you guys getting the word out? Social media, I'm sure.
Yep, social media right now. And then our next rally, I believe, is going to be in January. We're meeting in the next few weeks, Brandon, Candace, and I, to discuss all of those things. But we've got a good base of people so far from the 400 that were at the last event, and then the ones that could not make it but wanted to come. And so social media is a simple and fast way to get the word out, the message out. And when you have somebody like Charlie Kirk or Candace Owens that puts it out there, word travels pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. Any support from, black political figures?
Yeah, there's several. None right now are coming into my name, but I know there's several political figures that have supported it. I mean, I think the biggest that we named earlier is Ben Carson. He's aware and supports it. So I know that our goal is to bring as many individuals from the black community from different aspects of society to be a part of this and make a united front for the next 2 years going into 2020.
Are you anticipating you'll take some heat from, like, the Black Caucus and that kind of thing?
Oh, I'm sure. We already do, but that's what's new. They just continue to prove exactly what they're really about, which is not the black community. It's about power and keeping people down. And so it just they prove our point. They can do what they want to do, and we're going to do what we're going to do, which is make America greater again for the black community.
And Diamond and Silk, where do they figure into this? Just kind of like, are they your pips?
I haven't spoken to them specifically on this, but I know that Candace was with them a few weeks ago, so I'm sure they're aware of it, and I'm sure we'll figure out a way where we can partner and network together, because it's United We Stand as a country and as a people.
I don't know anything about those ladies. I mean, I've seen them on YouTube. I guess I should post that for people who maybe aren't social media people, but it's two black ladies that are...
Sisters.
Oh, they're sisters. Mm-hmm. Okay. How old are they?
I don't know, and I wouldn't guess. But
I'm guessing like 50s.
I don't know.
60s?
I don't think. No, I think they're older.
Are they younger?
They're early. I think they're maybe mid 40s.
She was talking so fast and everything. 40s, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen them on Tucker and.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Hannity.
Seen
them.
I've just seen them on videos.
Oh yeah. They're on a lot of stuff. Yeah.
And so when did they become super active?
Well, early on in Trump's election race for president, he spotted either one of their videos, and then he pulled them up on stage with him, and they just went boom. So pretty much any, I mean, they've got access now. If he's showing up at a rally,
sure.
You know, he'd love to have them there because they speak the truth. They speak what's on their mind.
They're really funny.
You know, they shred the stereotype that all blacks have to support Democrats, and they're funny.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But they don't mince their words.
No. No,
they
spit it real, so to speak. They
now,
definitely
keep it real.
Are you
planning on your movement being mostly like live stuff, or you know, you having like little chapters in other places? Have you gotten that far to figure out
what it looks
like?
Yeah, our goal is to have chapters around the country that will help support the movement for what Blexit's doing. And the biggest goal will be the rallies. And try to just get as many people in and bring as many to the table to hear what we have to say and hear what the speakers have to say to just continue the pendulum swinging. Can you even imagine if the black vote was on the other side of the spectrum, 80%+ towards conservative?
Oh, it would make a huge difference.
I never understood really why the black vote stayed where it was to start with, because they've always... That whole culture has always been very pro-family, and I never understood the abortion, the support of the abortion platform. That never made sense to me.
Yeah, especially when you have black pastors that are supporting Democrat policies and the platform, and it's abortion. It's like it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and it's not like it's a minor thing. Well,
no.
I mean, besides the fact as an event, it's a major thing. It's a life-ending event.
It's a life-ending event.
But it isn't just some little thing and all the other policies are great. I mean, really, a lot of those things are keeping the crime where it is, the gangs where they are, the poverty where it is.
Yep.
You look at places like Detroit. I mean, ran it all the way down to the part where they're, you know, I mean, the place imploded.
Yeah, it's been ran by Democrats for decades. Chicago ran by Democrats for decades.
Yeah, and the killing there is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's awesome, and I'm excited that you guys are getting the word out, because we can't do that. Only you can do that.
We can partner together.
We can, like, ride
like
along
today.
Behind and, like, yay, go David, go Candace.
We partner together and go for it.
But, you got our platform anytime you need it.
Yeah, we'd love to keep in touch with you as this thing progresses.
Absolutely.
The stalking will begin now.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you
Our
so
guest
much.
Has been David J. Harris, Jr., his book, Why I Couldn't Stay Silent, One Man's Battle as a Black Conservative. You're listening to We the People. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Is in bloom the PR transmissions will resume. I try to push, try to keep us all down and down, and hope that we will never see the truth around.